Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
My name is Talia Fayaz, and I'm a software engineer at Yield Street. I'm here with Glenna DeRoy and Marcus Brito, and today we'll talk about the evolution of our distributed fintech startup. Glenna has been the director of product at Yield Street for over 3 years now, and Marcus Brito, our principal technical architect, has been with Yield Street since its inception. Tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Hi, guys. I'm really happy to be here today. As Talia said, I'm one of the directors of product here at Yield Street. That's my dog. Focused on the investor experience. Before that, I was a director of product at an online lender, also based here in New York, and I started my product career in media.
Great. And Marcus?
Hi. So I'm the principal technical architect for Yield Street. That's a mouthful. Basically means that while Glenna works out exactly what we need to build to make our investors happy, I'll try to find out how we do that, how we can use technology to build that great product. Before Yield Street, I worked at a few other startups, helping bootstrap them and other large companies from agribusiness to telecom. And yep, that's it.
Awesome, Marcus. It's great to have you and Glenna here. I'm a newer engineer here, but since both of you have been at Yield Street for quite some time, what can you tell us about the evolution of Yield Street as a company?
Yeah, you know, I joined in late 2017, and at the time I was the only product manager on the team. I wasn't the first PM at Yield Street, but I was the only. So over the past few years, we've grown our product team to five PMs, plus now a chief product officer. And we've also integrated design and data into the product organization as well, which has been, I think it's really helped us sort of level up our skill sets as a team. And as a, you know, as the business grew, obviously, you know, we found the need that to build more simultaneously to serve the changing needs of our company and the needs of our investors. And so what was one engineering team, you know, became many smaller teams focused on various areas of the business, which Marcus can definitely continue to explain.
Yeah, we've come a long way. I've joined Yield Street, like Talia said, since the inception back in 2015. Back then, Yield Street was more an idea than an actual tech platform. But the idea was already very well formed. We had already people investing. We were already taking money, even though much of our tech platform wasn't exactly automated, right? Much of it was actually Excel spreadsheets back then. And then it was a matter of building a technological product around that, of automating as much as we can, of making sure that our operations scale. So as the company grows, as we acquire more investors, as we expand our product offering, we hire more people to ensure that we can build the technological platform required to make sure that this scales with thousands and maybe more investors.
Yeah, Marcus, so you mentioned that Yield Street's engineers have been in multiple countries since the beginning, but remote work has actually become a reality, I believe, for many companies just recently. Do you think recent events have changed the way our distributed system works? And if so, how?
It did, of course. I think we at Yield Street actually handle this probably better than many companies out there because we have been a distributed company from the start, right? I joined in 2015 here from Brazil and with Yield Street's office in New York. So from the very beginning, from the very first developer that I had, we were already a distributed team. And as we grew, that continued to be our reality. A couple of years ago, we added more people in Malta. We have quality engineers in Argentina and so on. So we never had to face that transition full on, like from cold in-person interaction to full remote at the same time? No. So we were hopefully blessed in that transition. But some things did change, right? Even though we already had used this kind of interaction, the small interactions that we had in office with intra-teams, right? The team here in Brazil, the team in New York, in Malta, we used to have a lot of interactions in those offices that are now gone, with everybody remote, with everybody working from home. So we have to be, I think, a little more conscientious of those interactions, of the need for those interactions, and just not, you know, assume that everybody is working from the same place, because, well, we never were, but now more than ever, right? So I think we just had to be more aware of this fact and create opportunities for that to happen, right? You are making a virtual call, like a stand-up call, or a meeting about a new future, or anything that we are involving multiple people in. It's not just about talking that one feature or the exact purpose of that meeting, but about creating space for more casual conversation, creating space for unscripted interactions between people so we can keep that team feeling going on.
I think that's very important too. Did anything change for you, Glenna, on the product side?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think that, like Marcus said, when we expanded our team to Malta so that now we were working with engineers who are based in Europe, not just in South America, you know, they're definitely about a year ago when we made that change, I think the team was really used to a lot of synchronous communication. We used Slack probably heavier than we should have. We took for granted that we would be able to schedule meetings at any time during the working day. And I think that, you know, adding the Malta team definitely made us, I think, a bit more efficient as a team in the past year, and one that emphasized more the importance of documentation and other asynchronous communication styles. So for sure, those adjustments helped prepare us. And I think that just in general, as agile practitioners, and, you know, we have been rooted so much of the coronavirus, I think impact has been that it's just been a disruption to people's routines and to what was normal for you. And so to be working at a company that, you know, practices agile software development and has the cadence of every 2 weeks, a sprint planning, a demo, a retrospective, like being able to fall back on those routines, I think that, you know, just kind of continued to use them, but they certainly were, I think, more important to us as a team under the current circumstances.
Yeah, definitely. I know as I started right now, my pod, my engineering lead is in Brazil, I believe. So I always kind of have to be there if I want to set up meetings with him a couple of hours early. So it definitely is a little bit tough, but we definitely make it work, I think. And I think the little things we do to stay connected as a company are so important. I mean, when I started, I only had like 3 months in at Yale Street, and then it was just work from home ever since then. But I do love the little things we do. Like, we've had engineering team lunches to kind of keep us together. So I do appreciate that. I think that's kind of what's keeping us all connected until we get back, hopefully soon. So yeah, tell us a little bit more about working together as a single unit, creating like a cohesive team. Maybe you can start, Glenna.
Sure. Yeah, I think that honestly, a lot of it, you know, has to do with, you know, who you bring onto the team. So I think that as we've been, you know, as we've grown, as I said, you know, from when I started in 2017, we've grown the team significantly. And, you know, hiring, you know, product managers, I want to make sure that, you know, we make the expectations super clear that the team in Brazil or the team in Malta or the team in Argentina, these are our teammates. It may not be the same as another, you know, working relationship you had maybe at a past company that treated perhaps the remote workforce as just that, as remote and sort of disconnected from your day-to-day activities. At Yield Street, it's a very different mentality and a very different approach. And I think that being clear about that from the onset is super important. As we've brought on new members of the team, I definitely think we've been successful at kind of communicating that cultural expectation. And I think that from then on, it's just about kind of adjusting your working style a bit to make sure that you practice good etiquette and, you know, include everyone in conversations that are relevant to them. And, you know, where necessary, you know, adapt your own processes or the way that you work to fit the way that this team needs to work. And don't get kind of hung up on your own sort of way of doing things or what may have worked for you in the past, but keeping an open mind as to the feedback that you're receiving from the team and adjusting from there.
Marcus, did you want to speak on this a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, everything that Glenna said Plus, one thing that I think matters a lot to me, especially like Lena said, being remote from New York, is that the team is not second class like other remote companies where we just get that work shipped to a remote position and that work gets completed and gets shipped back. You know, we are in constant interaction. We are the development team in Malta, in Brazil, in Argentina, in New York. It's one team working together towards a single goal. There are no hierarchies in that relationship, right? And when we are onboarding people, speaking from my own experience here, right, in Brazil, sometimes new people joining in don't fully get that kind of integration. Right? People are used to work for remote companies in that model where you are subordinate to another team that's demanding work from you. And that's not the case here. It takes a while for everyone to actually understand that every member of the team, no matter where you are or no matter what position in the team you are in, is able to contribute ideas, to bring up new products, to improve what we have today, regardless of exactly the kind of task you are concerned with right now. But the good news is that once that sinks in, once that people understand that, yes, I am a full part of this company and my ideas are worth and I can contribute as much as I want, this creates a sense of a shared sense of purpose for the whole team that really, really helps bind everything together, right? It becomes easy to collaborate when we have that shared mission, when we have that shared vision, and it's clear that everyone is working together towards that single goal of advancing your suite's product.
I totally agree. I think when I first came in as an engineer, I think, you know, I was always just assumed that I'd just be given tickets and just kind of like pushing those out. But I really was encouraged by our engineering manager and by my team to really like go and take on parts of the app that I thought needed work or anything that I wanted to improve, including working with other teams cross-functionally, like the design team and data team, to get little projects in as well. So I thought that was also really great. But even working as a single unit, there must be some cultural differences. I mean, we have people in Malta, Brazil, New York, especially New York. We're so diverse. How do you, Lena, Marcus, maybe you can start. How do you feel like Yield Street tries to bridge cultural differences and gaps? And is that tough for you or for us in general?
Yeah, I mean, first, I want to give a shout out to Camille, our chief people officer, who's been doing a great work of, you know, improving Yield Street culture and getting everyone together. And yes, there are differences between countries or even in the same team, because each one of us brings a different background, right? Each one of us have had different experiences in life, has a different identity, has something else to contribute to the team. And acknowledging those differences and being curious about them, looking at what makes each of us us and how we can bring those experiences to the table, help bridge that. I mean, keep being open about these differences, talking about them, being curious, and finding ways to work together is what works for us.
Clara, did you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I think, and actually I was just thinking as you were speaking, Talia, like, you know, for sure we're talking about the, you know, the impact of having, you know, a team that spans kind of multiple offices across multiple different countries. But, you know, you were mentioning that even for you joining a team, it's, there's sort of certain cultural expectations that as a junior member of the team, my role is this or my role is that. And I think that that's very similar in some sense to the, you know, the expectation that as someone who's not working in the kind of like New York office, that I wouldn't be expected or my ideas wouldn't be as welcomed. And so it's an interesting, I think, parallel to draw because, you know, I think it just speaks to sort of the company culture at Yield Street and just the attitude that we have around kind of ownership being a really core value to us. And so that is, I think, at the core of what we say to folks when they are new on the team or what we say to people who join in Brazil or in Malta. It really is, I think it goes back to that core value of being able to take ownership and, you know, feel that you have the capability to really impact this business. And, you know, that's why someone I think would be attracted, or certainly why I was attracted to work at startups, is just the sense that I would be able to have that broad impact was really something that I wanted out of my role. And it's certainly been the case at Yield Street. And I think that it just kind of goes back to that, like I said, that core value around ownership. I think beyond that, like definitely, as Marcus says, just approaching, you know, your differences with curiosity and just trying to learn more about what makes people tick. Just asking a lot of questions, I think, is the best way to learn about your teammates, figure out not only what makes you different, but also what commonalities that you share. And then you can kind of move forward working together upon that stronger foundation. Yeah. And then I guess the final point I'll make on this is that, of course, this year we haven't been able, you know, to do any international travel. And I do think that, you know, we will have to find a way to get back to that. I don't think that there's any real substitute for being able to kind of, you know, get on the ground and work with people kind of in their home environment. You learn a lot more about the culture. You learn a lot more about the people. And I think some of my, you know, most favorite memories of my time at Yield Street have been the opportunities, you know, that I've had to visit our offices in Brazil, Argentina, and right before coronavirus, also Malta. And we've hosted people here in New York as well. And it's been, I think, it's really been super fun to see people kind of experience the city, sometimes for the very first time. So I think that there's a lot of ways that we try to create that close bond. One of them is in-person travel, and you know, soon hopefully we'll be able to get back to that.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Sorry, it does help a lot that at the end of the day, we are more similar than we are not, right?
For sure.
A company like us, I think in the end, we are all just a bunch of geeks that love technology for itself. And that's a great conversation starter to begin with, right? There's a lot that we love together, and that helps us.
Yeah, I remember, Marcus, when we were at our pod meeting and we went around the room doing icebreakers and just asking, like, if we could each become an expert in something instantly. I think everyone, what was yours, Marcus? Did you say integrated circuits? And I said quantum physics. So we definitely share our interest in, like, math and science, for
Nerds.
Sure. And I remember when Lucas and Gustavo, two of our other engineers, actually came to New York, again, right before COVID. And I remember the whole team, I mean, the whole company came out to kind of spend time with them, and we did like dinner and drinks, and it was just great. But yeah, Glenna, what would you say, like, outside of product and tech, like, how do you facilitate that same type of relationship building and learning across all the teams, like maybe within the company or like external to that as well?
Yeah, honestly, I would say that this is one of the silver linings of COVID is really that teams that at Yield Street that were not typically working remote and did not have the same, I guess I would say, daily kind of orientation toward kind of a distributed workforce, we all got forced into it. And so there have been, I think, some changes that we've made company-wide recently that have really helped not just kind of keep us more in sync now that we're all, you know, or many of us are working from home, but also had the side benefit of really integrating all of our team members into certain areas of the business. So I'm just thinking about things like stepping up the frequency of our all company meetings, which we call word on the street. You know, that really was helpful. And a number of teams have started open houses as well. So, you know, 45 minutes to an hour on a particular topic that's close to their domain. You know, I've attended open houses from our investments team about deal restructuring. I've learned a lot about how they approach the due diligence process associated with our investments. And those were opportunities for learning that didn't really exist prior to COVID, certainly not in the form that they do, where they're now super open to pretty much anyone with an internet connection and a Yield Street email address. And I think the same could be said for, like, for example, our design team is doing open houses now, and even our infrastructure team. So other teams are also getting the experience of being able to learn from those within our technology organization. So I think we've taken advantage, I think, of a crisis, you know, in some ways that have really helped, I think, all members of the Yield Street team better understand the day-to-day. And I think it's brought us together. And so these are some things that I think we should continue even when we're able to return to our respective offices, because I think they've been really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. Coronavirus shown us that we need to be more conscientious about our communication, about our intra-company communication. And when we started applying actions to fix those gaps, we not only filled those problems that we had before, but also addressed other stuff, right? Like those intra-teams communication, things we didn't have before, and now we do. We are not only like backfill the gaps that we've identified during the coronavirus gap, but went beyond, creating more spaces and more opportunity for team interaction. I hope this is, and I'm sure it will, be something that we keep once this crisis is over.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, we also did, right before COVID, I actually run an organization called NYC Coders. I remember Yield Street teamed up with my organization to hold a software engineering panel. And we also did the hackathon. Maybe, Glenna, you can talk a little bit about how that might have helped us.
Oh yeah, the hackathon was great. You know, it's so funny, sort of a coincidence, I guess, that our first hackathon happened to sort of coincide. You know, I don't think that, yeah, COVID really drove that. You know, we recently hired a new director of engineering here who's been a great addition to the team. And so one of the things that he wanted to do was really try hackathon kind of as soon as possible. And again, it had some of the same benefits, I guess, as some of the other stuff I was saying before. You know, the opportunity to work on something that is, you know, connected to Yield Street, but not connected to your day-to-day gives you, and with different people that you might work with on a day-to-day, gives you that opportunity to develop new relationships, to focus on, you know, a challenge that is maybe a bit more imaginative or kind of outside the box than what you would spend, you know, your days doing normally. And I think it was really great. And it really brought us together. Like a lot of people participated, you know, on the hackathon teams, even from outside the technology organization. I think next time we'll probably have even more participation from outside the technology organization because I think the response was so great around the hackathon presentations and demos. And I think, you know, more people will want to get involved next time. We're actually doing one toward the end of the year. So I'm really excited for that.
I'm also super excited for that. We actually have a question from the audience. It goes to either one of you. How do you deal with the time zone gaps with your Europe office, especially with your Europe office?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, again, another area where it was difficult at first, but some silver linings. I would say the main way that we deal with this is by ensuring that all of our kind of meetings or the times when you may need that kind of cross-functional or cross-team communication happens between, you know, essentially 9 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern time. Yeah. And that's where we really get the time zone overlap. And it has the benefit of making sure that, yes, not only can we have that sort of cross-team, you know, communication in the morning Eastern time, but we won't be having meetings outside that time. So everyone else who is in South America or in New York can kind of focus a bit more in the afternoon and really have some uninterrupted time to work on whatever they need to work on that day. So that's definitely one way that we manage it. And as I mentioned in the prior answer, a renewed focus on documentation and on written communication has been a big part of, I would say, leveling the playing field when it comes to keeping in the loop on what we're planning to build and getting an opportunity to provide your comments and your feedback. Marcus, anything else other than those two?
No, that's pretty much it. The focus on asynchronous communication, right? On that, not having the expectation that your questions will come back immediately from someone else actually helps us frame our thinking better, right? We're not just firing a question right away. We are thinking what the problem is. I'm writing an email and say, hey guys, can you help me with that? And then the next morning, the answer came with a very thought out answer. It takes a little bit getting used to, you know, not having the immediate feedback, but with some planning, we can actually make it better than it was before.
Yeah, I think, I mean, otherwise, I think you just spend your whole day responding to Slack messages. And yeah. I do think that there's a sense that, you know, yes, it was a bit of an adjustment, but the added structure in our day is not a bad thing because, you know, I think we have enough, we're all humans and we can't always resist the pull of Slack as much as we would want to, but for sure, some of the structure helps with that, I think.
Sure, it does.
Yeah, and I think that's a great way to, I know, again, my engineering lead, Glenn, he is pretty much done at 12, so it kind of like kicks me into gear early in the morning to make sure if I have any issues, I get it out to him before that. We have another question from the audience, actually. Can you talk a bit about how you build out your product roadmap and how it changes when you have to pivot?
Sure, I can take that one. We plan on a roughly, you know, quarterly basis, and we generally plan for the upcoming quarter as well as a bit of planning for the quarter that follows. And so our plans are certainly at the, I would say, lowest level of fidelity if you're talking about anything that's happening, you know, 6 months out. Though even there, you may have some large initiatives that you kind of are already aware of being on the horizon that you kind of bucket the time for. I would definitely say that, you know, as a startup and still as a fairly young company, you know, you do have to remain flexible to changing business circumstances. You know, there are going to be times when we have the opportunity to maybe enter into a new business relationship or create a new financial product for our investors that may be of value. And of course, you have the macro environment to consider as well. You know, no one could have predicted this year's events, but I think that our response to this year's events has been one of kind of remaining flexible and remaining alert for those opportunities to create value for our customers. And sometimes that means you're going to have to change your plans. So while we do plan on a quarterly basis, we remain open to some of those opportunities. From there, I guess I would say that, you know, to keep in mind that we do have now multiple smaller teams. You've heard Talia reference her pod or her engineering team a few times. So we do have specific teams focused on various areas of the investor experience. And so the prioritization also happens kind of within those verticals to say, okay, for the goal of sort of customer acquisition, what are the top things we need to do this quarter? That type of thing will be prioritized separately than thinking about projects that would be more oriented toward existing investors. And so we essentially make sure that across the engineering and product organization, you know, we have resources for all of those important areas or important goals, and then prioritize within them.
Yeah, I'll just add that it does help that U3's product market fit has been so awesome from the start. I mean, of course, we are expanding our offering, we are building new products, and we do adapt, of course, to changing market conditions. But U3's core business today is the same as it was 5 years ago, right? We never had a true pivot like some companies have, that they end up in a completely different market space than they were before.
I think if anything, we've definitely expanded, right? We do have another question from the audience. I'll just keep reading these out. What applications are used between the product and engineering orgs to ensure alignment and delivery?
Go ahead, Marcus.
The tools that we use?
Yeah. Marcus, yeah.
I guess that's it. Not much, really. I mean, we do have a process. We do use some tools to track our progress, but much of the ensuring delivery thing is conversation and planning and just natural progress. It's not the tool that does it for us, right? We have Slack for day-to-day communication. We use email for asynchronous communication, especially with people in other time zones. We do use a ticket tracking tool called Clubhouse, not one of the most popular out there, and a few others. But these are there to support us, and they don't really enforce our process or our way of working.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that may be helpful to people, we, as I mentioned a couple times already, we had improved our focus on documentation a lot over the past year as we added the team in Malta. And you know, prior to that, we were and still are heavy users of Google Docs when it comes to things kind of in the planning stage. But we added Nucleno, which is a wiki as well, for sort of what I would call post-implementation documents, just to create a living record of what we've done so that, you know, new hires and other people who are switching teams, even within the company, can get read in on what it is we've been working on recently and kind of get up to speed that way. Only other thing I would call out is we use a tool called Fun Retro. I think all of our pods use Fun Retro for the 2-week retrospective at the end of every sprint. And I think that it's a great tool for distributed teams. It allows for folks to kind of think about their feedback independently, and then there's a process for then sorting, merging, and voting on the topics for discussion. And I think it's been something that has, you know, definitely produced a lot of engagement in retrospectives, which I think are so important to a team. And it's been, you know, great to use even with people who are not kind of physically in the same place.
Yeah, it's appropriately named. It's a fun little tool.
Yes.
Yeah, the retro, I think, gives the product managers on our team a great chance to kind of like create action items. And like, I think it creates a lot of accountability for sure. I like that a lot. Another question, how do you meet engineers or recruit remotely?
That's certainly more challenging, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Mostly it's boots on the ground, right? The team started in Brazil with me, and every other person that we've hired since then was in directly or indirectly part of my network, right? I mean, the first few hires after me were people that I directly knew, and after that got more recommendations or recommendations from recommendations and so on. We expanded our network. And I think in New York, a lot of the same has happened. And then in Malta, I think everyone there, one way or the other, is connected to Paul, our first hire in Malta, which then was connected to Rishi. So a lot of networking.
I don't think we've had to fully confront this question, to be honest. I think that, you know, like many companies, we've been certainly hiring recently, but I would say in a more focused and probably disciplined manner, trying to kind of re-enter and get back to normal at a sort of responsible pace. But I think we have made hires in the past 9 months for sure. And, you know, I definitely think it is a little bit certainly when you have those personal networks to rely on, it makes it a little easier. But, you know, we have hired in the past 9 months from people just kind of coming in through our recruiting website, our career site, and doing video calls as interviews with the team and onboarding remotely. I participate in the onboarding. I do a product demo for all of our new hires. So I've had the great opportunity to meet all of them, at least briefly. And definitely, I would say it's an adjustment and a challenge, but I think we've been pretty successful so far at helping people feel a part of Yield Street, even as they're new to the company. But it's definitely a muscle I think we've been developing in the past year. I don't think we necessarily had that competency prior to coronavirus.
What do you look for in candidates, would you say, Glenn? And maybe you can talk a little bit from the product side, and then Marcus could discuss what he looks for in an engineer.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, you know, what you look for is the sort of ability to think about the business strategy from a high level and then take that down into a more granular understanding of how you would change the product experience to meet certain business goals. So I think as a PM, it takes a couple of different types of thinking to be successful. You know, you do have to be able to think strategically and high level and speak with various members of the business about what they're trying to achieve. And then you also have to be able to work well with engineering on figuring out, you know, and design on figuring out, okay, we understand our problem. Now, what are the solutions that we might design together to solve that problem? And so there's a lot of teamwork involved here. And I think that that's maybe a misconception in like popular culture that, you know, software engineering is just like coders sitting in the dark alone. But the reality is that this is very much a team sport. So hiring product managers, I have to be really confident in their capability to communicate with all the relevant team members across the business, across design, across engineering, and to do that, no matter where those people happen to be based.
Yeah, and from the engineering side, I'd say the one thing that I'm looking for in all candidates is curiosity, right? It has to be someone that's willing to learn, that's curious about acquiring, learning things, acquiring new skills. Like I mentioned before, our soft engineers do way more than just coding. They actually contribute with product ideas and more. And it takes someone that actually has that curiosity to get that way, right? Not everyone does, and that's okay. I mean, to each their own. But for Yield Street, every employee, every engineer has to be curious, has to be someone who's willing to go out there and pick up new skills and learn new things.
And since we're talking about just teams and how they'd work together and how new hires would work together, and we are a fintech app, so how does the finance part of it come in? Like how do the engineers and the product and PDT, I guess, in general, which is product design and tech, how do they interact with the finance side, would you say?
I mean, of course, the product that we offer is not just a online platform for kind of investing your money and monitoring those investments, right? There's the underlying financial product without which we do not have a business. So our ability to really empathize, I think, with each other is super important. And we may come from very different backgrounds and have different sets of skills, but at the end of the day, we're all trying to achieve the same thing for our investor base, which is to enable them to invest in all the great deals that are sourced by the originations team and brought to our platform by the investments team and serviced on an ongoing basis by our servicing team. So it's really something that's 100% a team effort. And I think that I'll repeat a bit what I said before that, you know, prior to coronavirus, maybe it would have been harder for an engineer in Brazil to really kind of interact or hear directly from someone on the investments team. But now that we're doing more kind of virtual, you know, events, it's been a bit easier, I think, for us to develop that understanding of each other's roles and how everyone fits into the broader picture of Yield Street. So I think that's really been great and one of the major silver linings, I think, of this.
How does engineering interact, would you say, Marcus?
Pretty much the same, right? I mean, when onboarding every software engineer, we get that product demo that Elena usually does, but sometimes people from other areas of the company might be involved with explaining financial concepts, explaining how a product really works, not from a tech standpoint, but from an actual financial standpoint. Like, why are we offering this? Why is this attractive to people? We get to hear that from finance people themselves. It's a muscle, like Lena said before, we are flexing more often lately. We are still learning this, but it just gets better by the day. Getting that direct contact, that exposition in there to really understand what we are doing helps everyone.
So you're saying they're like a connection to the investors. So In terms of like how you would, like how does product and engineering decide what new features to add to our app or to our mobile app or to our website? How does that kind of come top down? I know when we did the hackathon, we built a bunch of really cool things. Like one of them was the simulator. And I recently saw that in our portfolio pod, a simulator was built in. So how does that kind of trickle down?
Yeah. So I think it's, you know, of course, it's a bit like what I said before, on a quarterly basis, we really think about like, what is it that we're trying to achieve as a business? And then how the individual pods or engineering teams can help achieve that goal. And each PM who works within each pod will be able to work with their team, including design and engineering, to define a bit the ways that they think the team can contribute toward meeting those objectives. And so from there, it's essentially you then develop a set of ideas that you have that may help achieve the goal. You have some sense of what their impact toward the goal is going to be. You're able to work with engineering to develop a sense of the ballpark level of effort to achieve it. And you use some of those dimensions, including how confident you feel about those estimates, to kind of force rank the priorities against each other. And from there, it's about understanding, you know, how are you going to then ship that within, you know, a 2-week time period, roughly one sprint, and then what's your plan for measuring going forward? How are you going to assess and measure whether the feature had its intended impact? And then what are you going to do to your roadmap to adjust from there based on what you learn? So I do think it's the planning process that I outlined earlier, as well as the ongoing commitment to measuring the impact and adjusting from there.
So there's a lot of data analysis involved.
Yeah, and I think as ideas come from anywhere, good ideas come from anywhere, like Marcus said, we create the expectation on the team that anyone can come to us with a good idea. And that includes the investors. You know, we're in frequent contact with our investor relations team, who hear from investors every day about what they're finding helpful, what they want more of, what they're not finding useful. People are not shy. They tell us. And we appreciate that, because it helps us become a better team, a better company.
Yeah, and as engineers, every request we get from investment relations helps inform us what could be better to build, right? I'm handling a bug, I'm handling a situation very often, I would think, hey, I don't want to deal with this every day. So I'll think of a feature that will reduce the numbers of requests like this, right, to make people happier. And one way or the other, engineers are also users of the application. If for testing only, we are every day logging in, going through workflows and doing, exercising the application. So we get to feel some of the pain, some of the same experiences that the investor has. And from these usually come suggestions.
Awesome. Well, there are no questions from the audience, so I do want to wrap up. I just want to say thank you to Glenna and Marcus for taking the time to do this. You guys did a great job. I hope everyone in the audience enjoyed hearing from them. Just before we leave, just make sure to visit yieldstreet.com to learn more about our offerings, and also visit our distributed.yieldstreet.com blog. It's our product design and tech blogs, just in case you want to learn more about our platform. I also have an article in there about being a new engineer at Yield Street. So definitely check it out and stay tuned as we release content on a regular basis. And as always, stay safe and healthy. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7 to 10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.